Welcome to the Property Career Podcast. Are you a real estate agent wanting to become top of your game? Or perhaps you're in a completely different industry and want to learn more about what a career in real estate would look like for you? Well, you've come to the right place. I'm your host, Jenna Fernley. In Property Career, we're going to interview some of the best minds in real estate about their journeys to success, their top tips, how they balance work and life, and much, much more. You are about to get some of the greatest insights into the real estate biz. Are you ready? Welcome back to the Property Career Podcast. Now, we have a bit of a famous number cruncher in the house. You would have seen him on Channel 7, Channel 9. He's all over the place. This man is renowned in the research industry. He's actually been in the research industry for more than 20 years. Welcome, Tim Lawless. Thanks so much for joining us.
Absolute pleasure. Thank you for the invitation.
Now, Tim, tell us about your role currently and the company that you work for.
Well, I work for CoreLogic. I'm running their research division, which is a relatively small but quite dynamic team. So mostly economists in my team. And we look at housing trends and we look at economic trends, demographic trends, and we try to make, put a story together on how the housing market is performing based on those three broad dynamics. So as you say, Jenna, it's a lot of number crunching.
It's scary.
Thank God for Excel, I would say.
Yeah, absolutely.
A lot of writing and a lot of speaking to people as well. That's kind of where we divide our time, is between desk work, crunching the numbers and writing content, and then going out to speak to people. And we do a lot of media as well. We speak to a lot of journalists and really try to, you know, make sure that the message and the education of what's happening in the housing markets is getting out there.
Absolutely. So I guess down the track in this podcast, we are going to be breaking down why this is so important for real estate agents, why data and research can really assist them in a listing presentation. But first, I want to find out a little bit about your background, where you grew up. I was saying to you before, I could never pick your accent, so this might make sense for some people who've ever wondered.
Yeah, it's an international accent, I suppose they call it. I was born in Taiwan, not that I really grew up there, but maybe there's a little bit of Taiwanese creeping through my accent here.
No, I'm not hearing that.
And we lived in the Philippines for a little while and then Australia. Then we moved to America. And most of my youth was actually in America up until about 14, around the Midwest, Chicago, St. Louis, Minneapolis.
How cool. Yeah. Very nomadic.
Very
cool.
And we came to Australia in 1984 and lived in Sydney for a little while and then came to Brisbane. And ever since then, I've been a Southeast Queenslander from Brisbane, and then we've moved up to the Sunshine Coast.
Beautiful.
About 10 years ago.
Lucky you. And what sort of terrifying degree did you do to be in the job that you're in now?
Yeah, well, maybe this is a bit of a lesson for those people leaving school. I actually did really bad at school. I played a lot of sports and I was quite
focused
socially
on that.
Active.
Yeah.
So back then it was a T score. So I was around average, if not even a little bit below average, mm-hmm. in my T score. So I went straight to TAFE after school. Did a 2-year associate diploma, which gave me the ability to boost up my T score and get into university. And I did information management at QUT. And that gave me some really good skills around databasing, a little bit of coding skills way back then. But I didn't really find that very interesting at all, to be honest. So I went on and did another degree, which was in business. So I did a business degree at QUT as well. And then my first job out of uni was with a market research company called MarketShare. Great company. And this was probably one of the best things in my career. I got to work for John Lyons, who was this really just absolute visionary marketer. And he worked with Edward DeBono quite a bit. And then RP Data bought that business. And I started getting a lot more involved in property research rather than just research more broadly. And have continued along the property research path ever since then.
And was that kind of because you fell in love with it, or it just, that was the role that was available at the time?
Well, yeah, I definitely enjoyed it. I wouldn't say I fell in love with it, but it was definitely a great opportunity to become very, I suppose, specialized in an area of research. And, you know, everyone's interested in property, whether or not you want to buy a home or you rent a home or you're looking to invest. It's a really topical, interesting area to be in, and it's always changing and evolving. So that's probably why I gradually just became, probably in love with this profession and industry, and have just plodded along this course.
I love that you weren't that good in, you know, school and whatnot. I mean, it just goes to show that, you know, post-school, if you do apply yourself and you do kind of find a niche area that you do really love, you can thrive.
Yeah, I think part of it was maturity as well. And, you know,
yeah.
I can't put it all down to just hard work. There was a coming more mature element to this. But also I think as soon as you find something that you really quite enjoy doing and you're passionate about, it no longer becomes work or hard effort. It's just part of your daily rituals. And that's how I see my career ongoing is it's just a real balance.
Absolutely. And
I really enjoy what I do.
Do you see yourself ever moving on, or is it something that you feel like you're in it for the long haul?
Yeah, I think I'm here for the long haul. Maybe if I did ultimately change career, it would be something completely different.
Real estate agent, we spoke about that.
It wouldn't
David
be a real estate agent.
David, hit me up and ask me to ask you. No, I'm joking.
I can give property away, no problems. I couldn't sell. But if I was to change careers, it would be something completely different, like maybe become a fishing guide or
You should meet my husband then. He wants to become a fishing guide. Oh, that's funny. Okay, so what I guess we want to find out, we use obviously RP Data Core Logic and we repurpose a lot of data. We use it for different stories and different blog articles. And I know that, you know, some of our best agents definitely leverage the data that you produce, you know, obviously to win listings or to inform clients. What are some of the best practices, the best ways that real estate agents could be using the data that's coming from your team?
Well, I think the first thing is to make sure you understand it, right? So a lot of people get bamboozled or their eyes glaze over as soon as you see a graph or some statistics and numbers. So I think that's the most important thing is take the time to actually do some training, get your head around how to interpret and read a graph, understand the macroeconomic environment. That's a real foundation to understanding how the real estate market's performing. And then once you understand that, it becomes a lot easier to then explain it to other people. And I think this is one of the most important parts of being a real estate agent is being able to talk to your clients and your prospective clients about the market trends and what's driving them, where the market's likely to be going from here and where it's been, what does it mean for them in selling their property or hiring a property manager. It's really important to instill that level of confidence. And a really good way to do that is to, I guess, talk about what's happening in your own neck of the woods, let alone more of a macro environment for housing markets and economic trends.
Mm-hmm.
So that's probably the place where I'd start is just understanding the foundational statistics and the trends, and then being able to utilize property-related data to build up your own brand as well. And I think that's where we see the really good real estate agents do a fantastic job. They can use research and data and analytics to educate their marketplace, but also to establish themselves as the local property market expert. They're the person people come to understand what's happening in the local market. It's one thing reading about, you know, what's happening across Brisbane as a whole, but the local dynamic is always going to be quite different. And I think that's where a really good real estate agent can really benefit from deep diving into data sets is to build a bridge between the macro environment and what's happening in their local market.
Yeah, so they can use, I guess, anecdotally what's happening backed by, you know, some statistics that show potential growth. And that's, I really like that. Tell me what are some of the key kind of, if I was, for instance, a real estate agent and I looked at your data and numbers aren't my thing and I'd completely freak out and go, wow, what is this? What am I doing? What would be your advice to kind of pick out what sort of pieces of data, like is it growth data or is it more, you know, what elements could they pick out to make it simple for them and their clients to understand?
Yeah, there's almost two worlds here. There's the data that a real estate agent and agency is really interested in, and then there's data that your consumers or your clients are going to be interested in. So let's start with real estate land first. So it's really important for a real estate agent to understand how much supply is in a market, for example. Listing numbers would be basic, right? So how many homes are actually for sale in the marketplace? How long do they take to sell? What sort of discounting rates are in the marketplace? What are auction clearance rates doing?
Mm-hmm.
All that sort of stuff. And you can also get an idea of what the available commission is in a market as well, just by looking at the gross value of sales and applying an assumption around how much commission would be typically on offer. If it's like 2.5%, you can apply that and say, well, if there's, say, $5 million of commission in this marketplace, so I can get, say, 5 or 10% of the market, this is what my income is likely to be. You can benchmark yourself against that. For clients, it's kind of different. So your clients are going to be most interested in what's happening with housing values. Are they going up, down, or sideways? So looking at median value trends, and obviously indices give us a really good indication of values over time. Transactional numbers, so how much, that gives you an idea of demand in the market, how many homes are being bought and sold, what's the rate of turnover like. And of course, your clients and your prospects are going to be interested in some of that other data I just talked about, is as in, what are selling conditions like? If I do put my home on the market and you put this price on it, do you think it's going to sell straight away? Or if I really want an urgent sale, what if I price it a little bit lower? Will that really help me to move it in the marketplace? So, yeah, I think there's a whole range of data out there that's available to tell that story. And then, of course, you've got a new field of data, or another component, which is, how do I actually set the price on a property? And so you can use a lot of the tools like a comparative market analysis to say, well, here's all the other properties that have sold around it. This is how my target property compares, and this is how I'm going to justify the listing price I'm putting on that home.
Absolutely. I think definitely the agents use that aspect, but some of those other elements I think will be really, really helpful for them. Particularly, I really like the personal growth one, to be able to say, you know, okay, if I could, you know, get this percentage, what would that look like? I think that's really great for goal planning as well.
Yeah, I mean, objectives and goal planning are so important. If you don't have a number you're trying to achieve, then how do you know if you've gotten there? How do you measure success?
Yeah.
I think any high-performing real estate agent would have an aspirational stretch target. If they can get there, fantastic. But it gives you something to work towards.
Mm. And if they don't, they should get it right now. This is their cue to go and do that, I think. Tell me about what you think about the Brisbane market in the last couple of years. I know the whole of Australia experienced this, but Brisbane has been a little bit different.
Yeah, I mean, Brisbane's always a little bit different. Every market's running its own race in many ways. But the last few years have been a real roller coaster ride. You've got the pandemic cycle, which was extreme. Like, we saw housing values just rocketing higher. The last time we saw growth of, you know, Brisbane values are rising for a little while, they were at about 30% per annum. Extreme growth. The last time we saw something like that was way back in about 2002, 2003. It was on the back of really strong migration rates and relatively low interest rates as well as affordability. And that's probably been another, I guess, advantage of the Brisbane market, is we came into the pandemic, so coming into early 2020, as a very affordable market. The market before that was relatively soft, at least compared to Sydney and Melbourne. So Brisbane had this real affordability advantage. It had a real interstate migration flow coming across the border that fueled demand as well, which is all these reasons are why housing values rocketed so higher. But then as interest rates rose in the middle of 2022, we did see the market move through a very short but sharp correction. Values were down about 6 or 7%. But last year, 2023, once again, they started to rise quite rapidly. And this was all about a lack of supply in a marketplace that was still facing quite strong demand side pressures. We're starting to see that growth easing off a little bit now. But I mean, just over the past 3 months, we've still seen housing values rise from memory around about 3.5% to 4%, which is still a really rapid rate of growth. So Brisbane does stand out still as being a very strong growth market from a demand side perspective. Supply remains very low. That'll probably be one of the key challenges for real estate agencies. Getting the listing is still quite competitive.
Mm-hmm. And that's what definitely we're seeing in this market. How does it compare? I've noticed there was a bit of a CoreLogic blast out in the media recently. How does it compare to the Sydney and Melbourne markets?
Well, there's a whole bunch of differences here. So first of all, Brisbane compared to Sydney in particular is much cheaper. So in Sydney, you're looking at a median house value that's up about $1.4 million. Brisbane's still sort of around the mid-800s. So there's a big difference in pricing. Melbourne, though, and Brisbane are now almost identical or neck and neck in terms of...
That's because they've all moved to southeast Queensland.
Yeah, exactly.
Everyone from Melbourne. Every second person I speak with, I feel like, has moved from Victoria.
Absolutely.
Have you noticed that?
There's so many people coming over the border. Victoria is definitely a key source or originating area, New South Wales as well. I can see it on the sunny coast as well. There's a lot of
On the Gold Coast when I was living there, huge amount of Victorians. Yeah,
absolutely. So pricing is now sort of very similar to Melbourne, but Brisbane compared to Sydney is still a real competitive advantage in terms of affordability. Rental markets, extremely tight as well. So you can see that around the country. Brisbane's not really unique in that sense that vacancy rate's around 1%. Rent's still rising, generally in double digits annually. So for renters, it is pretty tough out there in the sense that rental affordability is becoming more and more challenging.
Someone once said to me, what comes up must come down, and relating that to the real estate market. Do you think that that is going to happen in Brisbane and southeast Queensland?
Well, the market's definitely cyclical. I wouldn't say what goes up necessarily has to come down, but you'd have to argue that a growth rate of, say, 5 to 10% per annum isn't sustainable. You couldn't expect that to continue indefinitely. We're not seeing incomes rising that much. So if you see housing prices rising consistently really rapidly, faster than incomes, then ultimately affordability gets in the way of further growth. People simply stop coming, or you see structural changes in demand where people say need to rent rather than buy, or they
moving to the regions. I noticed regions. A story recently.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So, yeah, there is a story here about sustainability of value growth and affordability, that if you do see housing prices continue to rise really rapidly for too long, then, yeah, absolutely. It really does mean the risk of a downturn or a flat or an extended period of softness is probably a likely outcome.
And do you think that that's like imminent? Is it coming soon? Is it sort of a 12-month? What's your prediction?
Doesn't seem to be. So keep in mind, Brisbane came out of a really long patch of quite soft conditions between about 2012 all the way through to about 2019. The market underperformed Sydney and Melbourne quite substantially. There was also a time where the migration trend was nowhere near as strong as what it is now. So I think Brisbane still has some pretty strong fundamentals. Affordability is nowhere near as much of a barrier as it is in markets like Sydney. The migration trend is still very strong, especially from interstate, but also from overseas. And we're still seeing a shortage of supply, which tends to keep a floor under housing prices as well.
If you were to arm the agents with a couple of lines to tell their buyers and sellers, and we'll start maybe with sellers and then with buyers, particularly, I guess, buyers kind of waiting in the wings, sort of going, I'm just going to wait to see what happens. If you were to kind of arm them with a couple of lines each on what they could say for, you know, to sellers and buyers who might be worried about the market conditions, what would some of these lines be?
Well, the first thing I'd say, regardless of if it's a buyer or a seller, is it's really hard to time the market. Most people making these really high commitment decisions, like buying or selling a home, are going to be doing it on their own agenda, on their own timetables, based on their budgets or their financial circumstances or if they've changed a job, whatever. So I think most people, the timing of a sell or buy decision is going to be completely agnostic of what's happening in the broader environment. For those people that are trying to time the market, so clearly if you're a seller, you want to buy low and sell high, right? So clearly we've been through this
period. Never works out that way though.
It's easy in retrospect, isn't it? So if you're somebody looking to cash in on the strong growth, I mean, a really good way to look at that would be, well, let's have a look at how much housing values have increased over, say, the past 3 or 4 years or even the past 5 years. Brisbane housing values are up more than 50% since the start of March of 2020, which was when COVID became a thing. So maybe that's one way to say, well, here's how much equity you've likely built up in your home. If you're to sell at this price, this is your financial position going forward. So a lot of people are probably going to be quite tempted to take advantage of that previous or that recent history of very strong capital gains. For a buyer, it's a little bit different. So I think for buyers, there are some pretty significant obstacles to get into the marketplace, especially if you're a first home buyer or if you're a lower income family. Generally, the biggest obstacles are going to be things like raising a deposit, the transactional costs like stamp duty would be the two biggest barriers. Confidence is also getting in the way of a lot of people at the moment, with consumer confidence is quite low because cost of living has been very high, interest rates are still quite high, but we know that's starting to change now. So I think for buyers, buying now before interest rates start to come down, which historically lower interest rates generally tend to stimulate demand, is probably getting in before there's this new rush of buyers coming into the marketplace.
Tell me about, the rental market in Brisbane, and I guess some of the information that property managers and BDMs could be relaying to their investors.
Rental markets are pretty tough. Even for a property manager, let me go backwards a little bit. So rental markets in Brisbane are extraordinarily tight. We're seeing vacancy rates generally around 1%, around 1%, if not even a bit lower than that. Rents are rising double digit per annum. A normal rental market, you typically see vacancy rates maybe around 3 to 4%. Annual rental growth would be somewhere between 2 and 3%, roughly in line with household income growth. It's completely different now. It has been through most of the pandemic. So you'd think that that's a great thing for property managers. But the reality is it's become a really hard, challenging role because we are seeing vacancy rates so low, there's not a lot of churn in rental properties. Landlords, you'd think they'd be relishing this period of very rapid rental growth, but they've also seen significant rises in their
costs.
Mortgage
payments.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So the reality is mortgage costs have gone up a lot more than their rental income has gone up. So their yield has probably been compressed a little bit as well. So there's going to be some challenging conversations to have with landlords as well. There's also a changing playing field around policy as well. So people might remember a year and a half ago or so, there was this idea to increase land tax thresholds in Queensland. And that never got off the ground, but it does just disrupt confidence to some extent for investors locally who think that the playing field is starting to change and not in my favour. There's also been a lot of tenancy reforms as well, which, of course, property managers need to be across, where tenants have more rights and landlords have more obligations as well. So definitely a changing environment. And I think for property managers, they need to make sure they're across these trends and, of course, across the policy changes as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's been really tough from what I'm reading for both tenants and landlords. But is it still a good time for investment into, you know, Brisbane and southeast Queensland?
Well, most investors seem to focus on the prospects for capital gains. And in that sense, I think absolutely, it does look like this is probably going to be one of the key markets that investors are going to be paying attention to. Perth is also a very strong market for investment demand. Yield is quite often an afterthought for investors. Cash flow is good. But of course, if you're not making enough cash flow to cover your mortgage repayments, then most people would be utilizing a negative gearing strategy for some period of time. But prospects for capital gains is typically where it's at for an investor. And I think you'd have to argue Southeast Queensland is looking quite promising in that sense.
And in comparison to probably Sydney?
Definitely in comparison to Sydney and to Melbourne. We're expecting to see a stronger rate of capital gain here. And even the yield profile is quite a bit higher in Southeast Queensland than it is in those larger cities as well.
Yeah, definitely. How can people access CoreLogic data if our agents and other agents externally outside of place and property managers are listening? Where can they be accessing this sort of information?
Well, it's pretty easy. You can just jump on our website, corelogic.com.au, and you can log in to IP Data, which is our flagship product that most real estate agents would use. And you can do anything on IP Data. You can research individual properties. You can get market statistics. You can build your CMAs. You can get rental reports. You can look at marketing histories, pretty much everything that a real estate agent needs to do. Beyond that, there's also a lot of research on the CoreLogic website as well. So just click on the research and news pages and you'll see all the research that my team's putting out of the marketplace as well. And that's more about trends in the marketplace, what's happening in the economy. And that's really good information to then include in your newsletters, build out your own communications based on that sort of research material and that content, and add your own flavour to it.
How often is it updated and how often are we seeing sort of that information coming out from your team?
Yeah, it's weekly. It's really high frequency. So every week we're probably putting 3 or 4 new articles and new data sets up on our website. Every month we're updating our indices. Every quarter we have a few flagship reports like, profit and loss making sales. And we're about to put out our women in property report, which looks at female ownership in housing.
And what's media mostly? I know obviously CoreLogic does supply a lot of great stories to, you know, the Courier Mail and Channel 9, Channel 7, all the networks. What are they mostly interested in at the moment?
Well, property trends are really topical, so it definitely drives their readership. If you think about housing as an asset class, it's worth about $10.3 trillion. So about 55% of household wealth is in the housing asset class. So for that reason, everyone's interested in what's happening in housing. So you'll find the media report on the broad trends, but also they'll really dive deep. You know, look at what are the best performing suburbs, or where can you get the best yields? Mm-hmm. What are the most popular investment locations?
And anything the, like that. Yeah, it's, and the reason why I ask that is because what the media are interested in is generally what they think the public is going to be interested in. So perhaps it is, you know, worth our real estate agents and our property managers looking at what media is, you know, writing about to be able to relay some of that information too.
Absolutely. And journalists are always looking for case studies as well. A great way
existence. Yeah, there you go. Yeah, so, but it is a great way to couple the data with a case study to be able to enhance the agent's profile.
Exactly. Absolutely. A great way to build up a personal brand.
Any stories coming up? Any?
Yeah, there's always stories coming
up. Tell me, what's the on the back burner? What's a
what's coming up? So I told you about our Women and Property Report. That'll be released on International Women's Day.
Great.
A little bit later this week. We've got our Pain and Gain Report coming up. That looks at profit-making and loss-making resales across the marketplace.
And how's that looking so far? Have you had a bit of a glimpse at that?
Seriously, if you look at what proportion of sales across the country are loss-making, it's tiny. And a big part of that is simply this dramatic rate of growth we've seen over the past 3 or 4 years through the pandemic. If you own a property, there's a pretty good chance you've built up a lot of equity if you've managed to own that property for a longer period of time. There is this interesting sub-element to that report, which is showing there is a growing proportion of people selling their property in the marketplace that have only held it for a short period of time. And I think this is probably reflective of interest rates being as high as what they are, and some people that might have stretched themselves get into the marketplace and just simply not been expecting interest rates to go up as high as what they have. So short-term resales seem to be a growing phenomenon. It's still a pretty small portion of the overall market.
Is it the most you've ever seen it?
Yeah, it's only about 2.5% of all resales. So it's still pretty low, but generally it's less than 1%. So
what's, I guess, the most, and I feel like I know what your answer is going to be, but I'm going to ask it anyway. What's the most interesting market you've ever seen and why?
Yeah, I'll use a market outside of Brisbane because there is a market that really stands out, and that's Perth during the mining boom. Think about 2006 through to 2014. For a while there, Perth housing prices were rising at about 45% per annum. Perth prices actually got a little bit higher than what they were in Sydney at the time. It was a really good example of a real estate bubble forming. And as soon as the mining boom finished and all the big infrastructure projects wound down, prices fell really sharply in that market and they held low for quite some time. Really good example of, you know, one of the questions you had a bit earlier on was what goes up must come down. That was a good example of, a bubble bursting. Go outside of that, and another really good example would be look at, say, the Southeast Queensland market between 2002 and 2004. That was a time when, you might recall, Bernard Salt coined the sea change term for Australia, and it really was very much evident across Southeast Queensland and then rippled along the eastern seaboard of the Queensland coastline up to Cairns, Magnetic Island, Port Douglas, were all boom markets, the Whitsundays. But it started at the Gold Coast and Brisbane and the Sunshine Coast and rippled further afield. A lot of those far northern markets then went through a slump, but Southeast Queensland remained a pretty solid market. It probably just is a really good, I guess, testament of the depth of the economy is really important. Southeast Queensland has a lot of diversity, very strong population growth, and that really
business
helps
infrastructure.
Exactly right. That really helped to support demand long term.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Tim, thank you so much for taking the time to come and join us on the Property Career Podcast.
Absolute pleasure. Thanks, Jan.
Thank you.
Thank you for tuning in to Property Career. If you enjoyed today's episode, be sure to subscribe to be notified whenever a new one is released. At Place, our purpose is to help people find their happy place. From buyers, sellers, tenants, and landlords to our people inside the business. And we can't wait to share more of that with you. Don't forget to follow us on Instagram at Property Career for more tips, tricks, and insights into a career in real estate.